Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At-Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At-Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Jumping off hour two here of Sports Talk, Bobby Hebert, the Cajun Cannon. Saints color analyst, Deuce McAllister. I'm Christian Garrick. Phone lines are open at 504-260-1870. Text 870-870. Scott Frazier, head coach of the East Bank All-Star Little League baseball team, making some noise up there in Williamsport. Brian on a cell phone. Let's go ahead, Brian. You're on WWL.
Hey, Bobby.
Hey, Brian. What you got?
Hey, good. How are you?
All right.
I'd like to comment on that bad no call, but first I'd like to mention something that happened just before that. Do you remember when you played for the Breakers, there was a game when they lined up cars on the field and everyone threw paper airplanes?
Well, I mean, New Orleans Breakers, USFL, I played against them, not with them. That was Buford Jordan.
I'm sorry. I thought you were playing with them.
No, it was against them. They were truly the traveling all-stars. They went from Boston to New Orleans to Portland. Christian, think about that. NFL, professional team, one year they in Boston, then they came to New Orleans, and then they went to Portland. And that was Marcus Dupree,
Dupree, right. Yeah, he played for Oklahoma, didn't he, for a short while?
Yeah, Oklahoma Sooners, and then they even had a parade for him. I'm trying to think who was the owner of the team. It's a name slipping my head. A famous New Orleanian who had owned the New Orleans Breakers. Mm-hmm. But what are you saying, sort of fans throwing paper airplanes?
Well, I had seen you played, and I was really happy when the Saints signed you because I thought, man, this guy's got a great arm. He's a player. Oh, let me tell you what I called about the bad call last year. You know, it's been analyzed to death, so you probably heard this, but I haven't heard anyone say what I believe is exactly what happened.
Okay, I want to hear this.
Yeah, right after the play happened, a day or so later, there was a photo in the paper, a good, clear, still photograph. The defender is hitting the Saints player, and you can tell that they've just made contact, but they're close, very close together, and you can tell by the expressions that they'd just been a hit, and he was bouncing off. In that photo, the ball was clearly seen to have been, 8 to 10 feet away at least. Nowhere near the players when he made the call. Now, the referee made that hand-slapping thing that said the ball and the defender arrived in the same moment, correct?
Right. Yeah, that's what he tried to sell. That's what he tried to sell.
I think it's simple. The ref was watching the players, but he's supposed to be watching the ball, too, and he was not.
Well, you have to have peripheral vision. You're looking at the ball and the players. You got to.
Right.
You can't just have tunnel vision.
I believe he was unaware of where the ball was in that moment, so he made that call as sort of a way to cover his butt. Okay, they arrived at the same time when he was absolutely unaware of where the ball was. The photograph proves it. The ball was nowhere near the
ball. Well, that's why he should have asked for help, and when when the other official was coming, running up the sideline, you remember, towards him, and that's when he's going bang, bang. And he should have asked for help. Maybe he had a blind spot or whatever.
I agree with Dan Wolken, who was on with us last hour. I think he flat out choked. That's the bottom line. And I think there was a senior guy that was ultimately the junior guy didn't want to overrule or step on the toes.
All-star crew. Yeah. They're not used to working together.
Yeah, I think that there was a number of variables.
And the thing is, I think there's some truth to this because, let him play on the court or on the field. Like, I mean, is it a foul or a foul? Like, you're watching the end of an NBA game. Well, you almost have to tackle him for them to call a foul. That if it's like, oh, man, he's shooting a three-point shot, he gets hit in his arm. I mean, you might call that
foul.
You
got to call it.
In the second quarter, why don't you call that in the end of the fourth quarter?
Right.
See, and I think it's kind of one of those,
true.
But the thing is, the angle, like Brian was saying, maybe, it wasn't even that close. It wasn't a bang-bang play. It was obvious call that should have – then two calls player safety, helmet to helmet, and denied call with interference.
All right, coming back with Scott Frazier, head coach of East Bank All-Stars Little League Baseball team, next here on Sports Talk on WWL. A little house cleaning to take care of. Scott Frazier, head coach of the East Bank All-Stars Little League Baseball team. Well, they're in demand right now, so SportsCenter has them tied up, so we'll have them shortly. But we'll get with Scott Frazier. Here at WWL, every Saints fan is a VIP. That's why we want you to experience the new Saints VIP tailgate at Benson Tower. Listen to Sports Talk today through 8 p.m. to win a pair of tickets. We'll give away 5 pair this week for Sunday, December 8th, and 5 pair for Sunday, December 16th. Here's what you get. 3 hours before kickoff in Saints home games, all you can eat and drink premium open bar and delicious buffet food from Food Network celebrity chef Aaron May. It overlooks Champion Square and just steps from the Superdome. You can't beat this deal. It's awesome. When you hear Cam Jordan's cue, just call in to win. Lucky caller number 9, just like Drew Brees, wins tickets to the new Saints VIP tailgate at Benson Tower from our partners, BullseyeEventGroup.com and Saints Radio, WWL, AM, FM, and .com, along with the Radio.com app. Game tickets not included.
Drew Brees.
Bobby, Deuce, and Christian here on Sports Talk. Brian on a cell phone. What's going on, Brian? You're on WWL.
Hello.
Hey, Brian.
Hey, Brian. Hey, so I know you wanted to continue to elaborate about the no call.
Oh.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you if anyone had talked to that ref and asked him, hey, man, exactly why did you make this call? You know, it's clear that, you know, the ball was far away when you said the receiver and the ball arrived at the same time, or the defender and the ball.
Yeah, and you know, Brian, maybe Deuce or Christian might have witnessed something or observed. I don't know. He never had a press conference or nothing, or did he? Now, he amongst his friends. Now, you know, that'd be some whoever's his.
The head ref did, but not the particular official that was by the
He had a pool reporter. He gave an interview to the pool reporter. The white hat did.
Yeah, the white hat, the head
ref. Didn't say much.
Yeah, he was basically like, you know, he has to go back and look at the film. But in his opinion, it was the right call at that time.
Look, the truth is that, and I know fans, you're never going to forget this. But if I'm being honest, I'm kind of past it. That makes sense.
Well, Christian, and I can tell you the players, because you have to get over it. Come on, they got to worry about this season. I think Mark Ingram said it best. Here's Mark Ingram. I think he made this statement probably 2 weeks ago. He's in a Ravens uniform, and he'll say, I'll never forget it. But he's worried about kicking butt for the Ravens and doing his job. Now, you know, when you reflect back, you never forget, you compartmentalize. You put it in the back when you have a reunion. Like, when they're going to get together in 2028 or some dudes, you know what I'm talking about.
No, I know exactly. But I think what the way that they played it, from what Mark was saying, it was basically like he wasn't over, or the players weren't over it, you know, as far as not necessarily forgetting it, but not over it.
Yeah, and I don't think that – I don't know, you know, taking out of context if that'd be the right word, but it was almost, no, I'll never get over this. But, no, you compartmentalize. Mm-hmm. And then you go, no.
As you do
season.
With any adverse situation in your life.
Hello, right. Yes.
And we've all been through trials and tribulations in life, and most of us try to, you know, for the time being, whether you're at work or what have you, you kind of put that stuff to the side, and then you might think about it. They still might think about it at some point next year, but not in the moment of playing a game or preparing for the opponent.
Well,
of course, if you're driving around, Deuce, that those kind of thoughts can creep in your head. You're human.
But not while you're out on the field.
Right.
Or not while you're trying to prepare to play.
As you're driving around, though, that might pop in your head.
Well, and the same thing as a player. Now, I'm just saying, because we are human, a player could be having family issues at home. Maybe the wife or the kids or some personal issues. Man, the NFL, the coaches, the organization, they want you to compartmentalize that. Okay, now, I know you had some issues, but you got to be a pro. You got to be able to – now, you could deal with it, but when you come to work, you come to work. Now, what you do after work, that's a different thing. I think
correct.
Right, Deuce?
Yeah, that's true.
And that's what they expect.
Phone lines are open at 504-260-1870. Text 870-870. Bobby and Deuce, we haven't gotten to the Saints' notebooks in terms of practice today. We can do that now. And, Bobby, what are a couple of things that stood out for me? Trey Hendrickson continues to be disruptive and impressive.
Well, he had like 2 sacks back-to-back. I mean, you want to catch anyone's eye when you see that kind of disruption. I thought, and we need this because we've always been kind of the theme, I don't know, even look at OTAs, and we talked about this, we're a plus eight in the turnover margin. How can we build upon that? Because we protected the football last year. We got to continue to do that. But if we just take away the ball more, we have a great opportunity to be like plus 12. And then you're amongst the leaders in the NFL and that turnover margin. And looking today what occurred, and that is always encouraging. For instance, Christian, turnover margin, we were a plus eight. That was seventh best. How about, you know, we get plus 12, then we'd be in the top three or four in the NFL. Today, look at, because we talked about the nickel corner. Patrick Robinson, he got a nice interception against Teddy Bridgewater. And then P.J. Williams caused a fumble against Austin Carr. See, so you need guys, whether it's by committee or it's one individual getting more takeaways, but the bottom line is you got to get it done. Whether you force in fumbles, and I keep using this, I probably used the example in the offseason like three or four times, the Vikings game. That game on the road against Minnesota, I was like, man, there's no way we win in this game. How all of a sudden, for a quarter and a half, how they had all the momentum, and they taking it to us in the in-out territory. All of a sudden, was it Anzalone and they caused the fumble?
Yeah, Anzalone and then P.J. Williams.
And P.J. And then, yeah. Because so we end the second quarter, going into halftime momentum, and then we start the third quarter. P.J. Williams pick six. And all of a sudden, it's a different game.
Bobby, here's the scenario for me personally. If this team can create – last year, how many turnovers did they have? Not the plus or minus, but just turnovers.
I want to say we were in the low 30s. If I
turnovers?
No. Takeaways.
How many takeaways did we have?
I have to look it up.
If this team can create seven more turnovers.
Right.
But from a yardage standpoint, particularly rushing.
Okay, Deuce, I got it right here. I'm at 24.
So if this team can create plus 30.
Yeah, just say 30. Six more.
Six more turnovers, but let's say their yardage goes up in rushing. They're still top seven, but not top two. This year they were number two.
Right.
Run stop, you know, rushing defense.
Right.
But they're able to create six more turnovers. How much better do you think that defense will be?
I think because that'll help you scoring defense. And so I think instead of being middle of the pack, we could be I'd say 9 to 12. Yeah,
9 to 12.
Somewhere around there.
And we're talking six more turnovers.
Yeah, six more takeaways. Yeah.
Just six more takeaways from a not the turnover ratio. I mean, because that's the offense taking care of the ball
and
as well.
And you're taking it away, right.
Yeah.
But just them doing that.
We're just talking about from a defensive standpoint, creating six more turnovers. I'm going to probably say that's at least two wins, maybe three.
Yeah, that's six possessions for Drew and company. You got to figure out of six, they would turn half of those into points.
Well, not even that. I mean, one maybe pick six or scoop and score.
Right.
And you know what's crazy about it when you think about it? I think off the top of my head, we won the Super Bowl. I think we had like 39 takeaways. What? Think about that. Now we're hoping we get like to low 30s.
To low 30s.
Yeah. Like, can we get to like 30?
But you know also, 39. I think we had anywhere between 9 and 12 returns. Touchdown, I mean, fumbles. Or
seven defensive scores.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, but there were also some kick returns in there as well.
Right, like special teams, return game.
So,
yeah.
I mean, just think about it from that standpoint. Not even when you talk about six extra turnovers in the offense, Drew gets, you know, and the offense gets to come out there, but they don't even get that opportunity.
Well, the biggest reason the Bears had the season they had is not only is their defense stout, but they were forcing turnovers.
They were forcing turnovers, but they were returning them as well.
Yeah.
Well, I can tell you, that if we would have the kind of game, and now we end up winning, that's just luck how we beat the Chargers. We're down 70-3. I can tell you during the regular season, we could be playing the Cardinals. Okay, the Cardinals, who's one of the weakest teams. If we get inside the 10-yard line on goal to go twice and we turn it over.
You're going to lose.
And then plus a punt return, I get you. But touchdown, you're not winning.
Yeah, you're going to lose.
Yeah. That's why I'm saying when you look at Sean's, you know, emphasize that with the team. Like, what? No, totally unacceptable. That's what I've noticed that in the Vikings. Now, Drew hasn't played. The Vikings, and you look at the Chargers game. We've been El Succo in the red zone. I'm looking goal to goal. Deuce, and we were top. We were number four in the NFL. Right now in the red zone, this is touchdowns, we're 2 of 8. So 2 of 8, what? You're not winning anything. So we're listen, we're not even getting field goals. We're turning over the ball, so we're 2 of 8 and 1 of 4 goal to goal. So that's one thing I know is that bothers Sean Payton. He's in charge of offense, and plus you give up a punt return for a touchdown. No, regular season, you're not winning those games.
More Saints practice recap, and a look ahead to the Saints preseason game number 3 against the Jets this weekend after our CBS and local news headlines here on WWL. East Bank Little League All-Star team representing up there in Williamsport, the head coach of that team, Scott Frazier, joining us now. Scott, how are you? And congratulations on the run you guys have been on here.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
You guys are popular, huh? On demand from ESPN, and everybody's trying to get a piece of it, huh?
You know, it's just kind of funny, man. It's just the kids just going through the motions with all this stuff, playing in front of 20,000 people. I don't even know how they do it. It's just they just go out and play baseball, and they don't worry about the crowd or the TVs anymore. It's just they're amazing. I don't know how they do it.
And you know, Scott, that's what I was bringing up with Deuce and talking about. I don't know if I was that age, maybe the lack of exposure to be on something like ESPN and then that large of a crowd. Could you have handled that when you were a youngster, or what were you exposed to? Because that's what impressed me the most is that how they're able to play at a high level with all this pressure at a young age.
You know, the job that me and the other guys, the other coaches are trying to do is to minimize the pressure and the scale of what they're doing now. And what I mean by that is just, you know, we only give them short periods of time to be on their phones, you know, to try to minimize the social media aspect of it. But I mean, I don't know. After about a day or two, they started getting used to the cameras when we were playing in the regionals. And then up here, you know, the TV wasn't so much of an issue as much as it was the crowd and the setting for the first game against Hawaii. And I don't know, they just acclimated to everything. And, you know, we get out there before the games, it's like, gosh, just baseball. You know, just play baseball. But
right.
By the same token, it's a little bit more than that. And but, you know, we've also told them to, you know, we've already won. We're in a Little League World Series. And, you know, a month after this thing's over with, you know, nobody's going to remember if we do win the U.S. championship or if we just were competitive and represented well and did the best we could. You know, at the end of the day, they're just going to remember that these guys made it here. You know, winning this thing is just, you know, a cherry on top, you know.
Yeah, Scott, you could say like lanyard, like we'd say in these parts, right?
Right, that's right. Lanyard, exactly right.
Scott, got a question for you. Have you guys had an opportunity just to be able to go and tour and see, you know, almost like say, hey, look, you know, yes, we know we're playing in it, but I want you to see the history of it as well.
Yeah, there is a museum here, and we did go through the museum. It was wonderful. And even beyond that, I cut the kids loose. Like this evening, we got a big game. We're going to play the loser of this game. I'm actually standing outside the field right now. And so I'm going to let the kids go off. If their parents are here and they want to go spend time with their parents, I'm encouraging them to go spend time with their parents in the outfield, watch the game from a different perspective, and just trying to get them to soak everything in. They don't understand the grasp of what they're doing at this point. You know, they really don't. I mean, right now they're just kids. They're not in school. Everybody else is in school. They're just having a good time playing some baseball and happens to be in front of 20,000 people on national TV, you know, but they're just like, yeah, whatever, you know, cause after the game was over this morning, you know, we went back up to the dorms. They showered, changed their clothes, we went and ate, and they were just acting like kids. And we actually cut them loose and let them go sliding down the hill today for the first time. You know, because I want them to get an opportunity to experience all of this stuff, which has been just unbelievable. It's just been an amazing experience for all of us. It really has.
Scott, how cool was it to get that video from Drew Brees encouraging you guys?
Yeah, that's cool. You know, all that stuff. The governor did one yesterday. I mean, you know, the kids got a real kick out of the Drew Brees and Sean Payton sitting in the video. And, you know, and again, I think that they're probably like, wow, they even know we have a team, you know? So I think they were pretty impressed by that.
Scott, have you slid down the hill? That's a tradition, man.
You know, I did today for the first time because after this is all done, I actually need to go back to work after being off for a few months. So I didn't want to break any limbs, but I was like, well, I got to try it at least one time. So I did do it. It was fun, but I'm not going to do it again. I don't want to risk any chances of injury at this point.
And, Scott, you talk about the time constraint. What has to be challenging for you and your family and also the commitment with that and all the kids to be able to play at the highest level on this big stage?
You know, we started with these little guys in the beginning of June, and we've probably only been away from them for 2 or 3 days. So we've practiced or played games, you know, all the way since the beginning of June. And we actually left to go out of town for the regionals the morning of July 30th. And we've only been home for 2 days, but it really wasn't being home for 2 days because we had so much stuff we needed to take care of. So we basically have been gone since July 30th. And, you know, the kids have missed, you know, some time at school. And, of course, the parents are missing a lot of work. And me and the other two coaches that coach this team, we don't have kids on the team. We, most of us have daughters. And but all our families have been able to come up at least for a short period of time to come enjoy this experience with us and with the family and the kids, you know, because they also get, you know, really involved with these kids and the families each year, too.
Scott, you guys are creating lifetime memories, man.
Oh, yeah. I think the rest of my life is going to pale in comparison to what I'm experiencing now. And even my daughter says, she said, you basically ruin these kids for the rest of their life because nothing will compare to what they're experiencing here. It's unbelievable. It really is. It's truly a remarkable experience. It's been just fascinating.
Scott Frazier, head coach of the East Bank All-Star Little League baseball team up there in Williamsport, play tomorrow, the winner of Virginia and Hawaii at 6 o'clock. And, Scott, do you want another shot at Hawaii?
Well, we're going to get a shot at both of these guys because I don't care who we play tomorrow. I feel we're going to win. We're throwing our 1A, 1B through today and shut down a really good New Jersey team. And we're going to start Marshall Lute tomorrow, and he's going the distance. We're not doing no word about pitch counts tomorrow. He's throwing 85. So we're going to ride him tomorrow. We feel really good. There's going to be a team that's going to lose this game tonight. So this is going to be the first time they've lost a game all year because neither one of these teams have lost at all this year. And so also be the first time that one of these teams are playing in an elimination game. So, and we're coming off of 3 wins. So we've got all the momentum in the world. These guys know that we've got our horse ready to go for tomorrow. And I'm sure there's a lot of pressure, and I'm watching them warm up right now. There's a lot of pressure on these two teams to win this game because they know that they're going to be facing Marshall Lute tomorrow night in an elimination game. And then whoever does win this game, we just got to beat them once. So it's not there's no if necessary game, you know. So,
right.
Again, it's going to be the first time that one of these teams are going to be facing an elimination game because it's a winner-take-all kind of game on Saturday for the U.S. Championship.
Now, Scott, when you compare the United States, obviously, baseball, America's pastime, to the international teams, just talk about the competition because you see how in Japan baseball is a priority, South Korea, Curacao, to go on and on. How would you compare what we're doing in the States compared to internationally?
I think the difference is number one, the teams that come here from those other countries probably draw from a much bigger area than what we draw from. But the other thing is a guy that's in our program, he was in our program a few years ago. He's in the military, and him and his family went and spent some time in Seoul, Korea, and his son was actually the only American to ever play in the Seoul, Korea Little League program. And they practice 6 days a week, and they practice 4 to 5 hours a day. And so the difference I see from the Japanese and the Koreans is just they are unbelievable with just basic fundamentals, whether it's bunting, throwing, catching, et cetera. And we've got our team is extremely good with fundamentals, but those guys are just impeccable. Hawaii is the same way. I guess they maybe have some of the same practicing type of deal that the other Asian team has.
Right.
But, I mean, I saw a little bit of the Japan-Korea game earlier today, and I feel that we can compete against those guys. I think we're just as good as they are. They're not better than us, you know. So I think if we could somehow win these next two games and get to the international championship game, I got Prather, the kid that pitched today. He'll come back on Sunday to pitch in that game. So we feel good about where we are right now because the guy that would throw Saturday, little Will Andrade, he's the guy that was on SportsCenter number one for the triple play and a couple of other plays. And he's the kind of guy who's like, just give me the ball, like whatever. He could be playing at LaSalle Park in Metairie or Williamsport, Pennsylvania. It doesn't matter to him. He's just goes on, just plays, and nothing bothers him. So we've got everybody. We got all the right guys set up to try to finish this run out, you know. So we feel good about where we are at this point.
Coach, when you talk about support, not necessarily from people around the state, but just the organization, how much support has the organization given to be able to help you guys and just to be able to support you so, you know, A, it can be something that you guys are competitive doing, but B, where it's not something from a financial situation where it drains you guys so much?
Well, from a organizational standpoint, Little League does a great job of helping with the finances for the regionals because they – go ahead and take care of the hotel rooms for the kids and the coaches. And they also provide for some meals as well. For the World Series, they pay for everything. So from the flights, we stay in a dormitory type of thing on the facility in a highly secured area. So we stay on the facility. From our balcony, we can oversee the field. And then, you know, there's a cafeteria on site, you know, inside of that secured area where we go eat. So really, financially for the team, we're good. Where it becomes a little tough is for all the families that are spending so much time away from work and then all the expenses to come and see their children play for such a long period of time. I mean, we've been in Williamsport now for like 10 days already.
Scott Frazier, head coach of the East Bank All-Star Little League Baseball team. They're back in action tomorrow night at 6 o'clock facing the loser of today's game, Hawaii or Virginia. Hey, look, we're all pulling for you guys.
Thank you very much, man. I appreciate it.
All right, Scott, who dat?
Get it done.
Who dat, baby?
This is Sports Talk here on WWL. WWL congratulates John Lavarine. John Lavarine will be our guest at the Saints VIP tailgate experience at Benson Tower on Sunday, December 8th. Tickets valued at $174 a pair. Game tickets not included. Go Saints from Cam Jordan, Bullseye Event Group, and Saints Radio, WWL. We'll continue to unpack Saints training camp practice today here on WWL. Bobby, looking forward to Sunday competitive eating. Real sport, just fun. We're going to be out at Fat Boys Pizza for the Fat Boys Pizza Eating Championship. Joey Chestnut, the world champion competitive eater, will be out there along with celebrities and other guest appearances. They're going to try to eat as many 2-foot pizza slices as they can in 10 minutes. Deuce? Bobby, how many could you get down, 2-foot slices, 10 minutes?
I don't know. If I'm hungry, I probably can eat a lot, but then I get sick or something. I'm not a professional eater, Christian. I might at times look like it. It's amazing when I look at Joey Chestnut.
He's not a big guy.
No, Deuce, whether it's whatever he's putting in, hot dogs, whether it's chicken wings or pizza, it's amazing that you could be and make a living as a professional eater, and you're not fat.
And then he doesn't put on any weight.
Yeah.
He's able to burn it all off.
It's like him, Joey Chestnut, and they have a rivalry with the Japanese guy.
Kobayashi.
Yeah. Think about that.
So, Christian, is it not eating for like 2 days?
I don't know. Apparently, competitive eaters eat a lot of lettuce, because it expands your stomach with the water and the lettuce. So that's apparently how they train.
What we're going to do with the competition is Christian and I are going to tag team, but I'm going to force feed Christian.
He's going to make me choke on it.
Pizza down his mouth.
We'll be there Sunday from noon till 2. Fat Boys Pizza Eating Championship. Sports Talk continues here on WWL.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.